Campaign 76, the New York and Wisconsin primaries. I'm George Herman.
And I'm Neil Strauser, reporting with George on the CBS Radio Network. George, we expected a long night, and it's turning out to be that way. The open nature of the primary in Wisconsin, where Republicans, Democrats, and Independents can vote in either primary, is making it difficult to determine a winner in what is turning out to be a fairly tight race in Wisconsin between Morris Udall and Jimmy Carter. And, of course, there is that complicated situation in New York where votes are cast directly for delegates in the 39 Democratic congressional districts. As we've been saying, 39 separate primaries in effect. The Wisconsin Republican race is decided, apparently, with President Ford, the estimated 56% winner. We'll return to that. But first, George, let's take a look at the Democratic races.
Well, let's take Wisconsin at this point anyhow. 56% of the vote in at the moment. Udall has 38%, Jimmy Carter 36%, George Wallace 12%, Henry Jackson 7%, and so on down the line. That sounds like a good lead, 38 to 36%, but still we are unable to say at this point that Udall will in fact win or has in fact won.
I think Udall himself thinks he has won, though, and we'll hear about that from Mike Pappas at Udall headquarters in Milwaukee.
As far as Udall supporters are concerned, the Wisconsin race is not too close to call at this hour. To them, Mo Udall is already a winner. Several thousand Udall workers and supporters are jammed into a ballroom in the Mark Plaza Hotel in downtown Milwaukee, cheering as the good news keeps coming in that their man still leads Jimmy Carter in a tally here in Wisconsin, and that he apparently is doing better in New York than he expected. If Udall does go on to win here and does come close to Jackson in New York City, his campaign will get a tremendous morale boost, and the money will probably continue to come in to finance other primaries for Mo Udall. Mike Pappas, CBS News, Milwaukee.
This was, of course, a primary that Udall said he had to win to keep his campaign viable. It appears to be coming close at least. As for Jimmy Carter, who made a late effort in Wisconsin, Udall was there long before Carter. Carter is doing at least well enough to have some joy as he makes his comment tonight.
We started working out here in Wisconsin about 10 days ago. Since Massachusetts, Congressman Udall has been devoting most of his time up here to Wisconsin. I think Senator Jackson's devoted almost all his time to New York. But in the meantime, I've been in Kansas and Virginia, and also have been campaigning very aggressively, as you know, in North Carolina and Illinois. So we don't have the exclusive allocation of our time to Wisconsin, but I really thought that we might come in first up here. I predicted that I would come in either first or second, and that Udall would come in either first or second. My prediction was right, but I can't deny that I would rather have come in first.
Now let's take a look at the delegate situation in New York, that complicated situation. You will remember that Senator Henry Jackson predicted that he would win slightly more than half. At the moment, Senator Jackson has 96 delegates leading, 96 delegates pledged to him who are either leading or have won. Morris Udall has 68, Jimmy Carter has 41. He said about 50 or 51% at the moment. He has something like 36%, which is a little less than he figured. And there's also the question of whether Hubert Humphrey votes, camouflaged as uncommitted, have been cutting into him. Let's turn to Jerry Landy for that story.
The showing of the uncommitted slates is a testament to the strength in their areas of some very canny politicians, their local organizations, and the ability of their machines to get out the vote. As a rule, voters do not go the uncommitted route in significant numbers, but local organizations placed uncommitted slates in the race in all but two of the state's 39 congressional districts, comprising 218 uncommitted delegate candidates in all. It's been estimated that about a fifth of these are considered would-be Humphrey delegates. In the Buffalo area, for instance, Erie County Democratic leader Joseph Krankel, formerly the state chairman, had three uncommitted but avowedly Humphrey slates in the primary. There are reports that other district leaders were passing out literature and buttons near polling places today, advertising the uncommitted link to Humphrey, and all apparently without Humphrey's sanction. In fact, Krankel said, there's no grand strategy. Everyone is on his own. Jerry Landay, CBS News, New York.
At this point in the Democratic race, the uncommitted delegates are actually running second, with 69 neither leading or elected for uncommitted. Behind Jackson's 96, Udall has 68, Carter 41. In the Republican race in New York, there really wasn't much of a contest. Ronald Reagan competed in very few congressional districts and may have won or is leading for about three delegates the other 114 that so far seem to be decided, or where there's a lead showing, will go to an uncommitted slate, which is in the control of Nelson Rockefeller, and should go, of course, to President Ford at the convention. And as for the Republican race in Wisconsin, those figures again, estimated 56% for President Ford, 43% for Ronald Reagan, 1%, none of the above. And we'll hear the White House view of that victory from Robert Pierpoint.
The president's spokesman said Mr. Ford did better than expected in Wisconsin. Ron Nesson told reporters tonight that earlier today he had considered forecasting the president would get 53% of the vote there, but was warned by White House political experts to make no predictions. Still, with the results now giving the president several points above that 53%, Nesson said, we expected a little less than that. The press secretary also gave Mr. Ford's reaction.
The president is very pleased by the results in Wisconsin, especially the outcome in the delegate races. The president wants to thank the campaign workers for their efforts in his behalf and the voters in Wisconsin for their support.
What all this apparently means is that President Ford's relatively strong campaign effort in Wisconsin paid off. That in turn means he can be expected to campaign at least equally as hard in Texas, where most experts believe Reagan is now leading. That contest is May 1st. The Pennsylvania primary comes earlier, April 27th, but Reagan is not running there. Nevertheless, as Nesson points out, those votes count toward the president's total, which continues to mount. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, at the White House.
As for the losers tonight, there's been no comment from Ronald Reagan as yet. And as for George Wallace, who's running a distant third in Wisconsin and so far appears to be winning no delegates in New York, where he didn't make much of an effort, a report from David Dick.
Governor Wallace told CBS News he not only feels good, he is elated if he can hold third in the Wisconsin primary. He even said he'd consider that a victory because it could mean 10 delegates pledged to Wallace in Wisconsin, 10 delegates which he did not have there in 1972. Can Carter now be stopped if he does not win in Wisconsin? Wallace replied he's not trying to stop anybody. The governor is not quitting. Every indication here is that he will continue campaigning right up to convention time. Just how active it will be depends on campaign funds. Mostly, it'll be a media effort. David Dick, CBS News, at the Wallace National Campaign Headquarters in Montgomery.
So far, of course, we've been talking about Democrats versus Democrats and Republicans versus Republicans, but in the end, Neil Pierce, it's going to boil down to Republican against Democrat and vice versa. How would it come out?
Well, looking forward to the November elections, some hypothetical trial heats were made in the CBS News New York Times survey today of voters leaving the polls in Wisconsin and New York. The Wisconsin results are the most interesting ones. As of today, either Jimmy Carter or Morris Udall run virtually even with the president in that swing state in presidential elections. But Hubert Humphrey trails the president 28-41%, and Henry Jackson, who, of course, wasn't campaigning as actively recently in Wisconsin, trails by a large margin, 44% for Ford, 19% for Jackson, and the rest undecided. In New York, only Democrats were polled, so we don't have as full a comparison, but it is worth noting that all the major Democratic contenders, Carter, Jackson, Udall, as well as Humphrey, win a solid 60-70% of their own party's vote against the president in trial heats, with few significant Democratic defections to Mr. Ford.
Some other interesting things emerge from that poll, I think, Neil, and in your position as our CBS News political consultant. We see that Jimmy Carter apparently is slipping a little bit on that issue, which Udall and Jackson have been pressing, the matter of avoiding taking positions on issues.
He's slipping in terms of being considered by more people fuzzy on certain issues, not precisely giving a full position. However, he doesn't seem to be slipping on the honesty issue. It's just that some of the other candidates are looking better on that than they were in the earlier primaries.
All right, let me ask you one question before we run out of time. Morris Udall may be first, he may not, but he may be first in Wisconsin. He seems to be second in New York. Does that give him a real boost?
It's the great boost that he needed. He said he needed to place a good solid second in New York. He needed to win in Wisconsin. He's done both those things. His problem is he hasn't been in the other primaries quite to the extent that former Governor Carter has.
And as we talk, he's moved into what seems to be a pretty good solid second in New York, winning or leading for delegates, 72 of them now, trailing Henry Jackson by 97, and he's gone ahead of the uncommitted.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. This is Captain.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall, Major Domo of this mansion of the mysterious and the macabre. This is the story of a search for a wild talent. You'll learn all there is to know about wild talents very soon, and you won't like it. In a sense, this is a treasure hunt. But the prize isn't money or jewels or pirate gold. No, nothing like that. And there isn't any ancient treasure map. No, just a very modern telephone directory which a man carries with him in his car as he drives from address to address throughout the city.
Mr. Buchanan?
Yeah?
May I come up, please?
Who are you?
My name is Davis. John Davis.
What do you want?
I want to offer you a reward, Mr. Buchanan. $5,000.
What?
You heard me. $5,000. If.
If what?
Well, why don't you let me come up and tell you?
$5,000? Okay, come on up.
Our mystery drama, The Boy Wonder, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Alfred Bester and stars William Redfield and Robert Dryden. It is sponsored in part by Allied Van Lines and Sinoff, the sinus medicines. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You know, I just thought of something.
Yeah, what's that?
Well,
Sears,
Skokie, Lincolnwood, Morton Grove, Niles, Golf. These are the suburbs served by The News, a progressive newspaper in a progressive area. Whether your needs be buying, selling, renting, or hiring, the classified columns of The News are your answer. 50 years of service to the Niles Township community means they are established. In fact, the established newspaper. OR35000. You're that close to one of their trained specialists who will assist you in preparing your ad message and keep your cost to a minimum. You know what items you've put away and will probably never use again, much of it like new. Why not convert it to cash? Call the Post Leader News at OR35000 to be sure that your message is in front of thousands of readers next Thursday. That's the Post Leader News at OR35000, OR35000. This is WBBM Chicago, News Radio 78. Starry skies tonight, fair and mild, low near 41. 52 degrees right now at Midway Airport, Lupin Lakefront temperature 48, humidity 39%. Treasure hunter is named Marion Perkins Warbeck. He is an intense young man, afflicted with an education and inspired by a purpose which most people would regard as lunatic. But then they don't know about wild talents. Marion Warbeck has been telling lies about himself and his search all through the city. And he's lying now to Jason Buchanan.
Yeah?
It's me, Mr. Buchanan, John Davis, with that reward.
$5,000.
Right, but I said if. May I come in?
Sure. This way.
Thanks.
Now, what's all this, anyway?
Nice apartment, Mr. Buchanan. Looks lived in. You got a family?
Yeah. Now, about that $5,000. Is this some kind of fancy put-on?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm from the Science Institute.
Never heard of it.
Well, that's understandable. We're a very quiet organization devoted to research, but we're big, Mr. Buchanan.
Yeah. So? What about the $5,000 reward?
Well, we've got a new research program fully funded to check out the flying saucer mystery.
Flying saucers?
Yes. You've heard of them.
Yeah, who hasn't, but...
I know. You don't take the report seriously, but we do. Very seriously. You see, we're trying to put together firm reports of flying saucer sightings, and we're offering a $5,000 reward to reliable witnesses who will be willing to come forward and give evidence.
You guys must be crazy.
No, not at all. Have you ever seen a flying saucer?
No.
Oh, that's too bad.
Anyway, that's a lot of bunk. Flying saucers?
Well, you're entitled to your opinion. Have your children ever seen them?
Hmm? What?
Your children. You do have children, don't you?
Yeah, but they...
How many?
Two. Them flying saucers never...
Are either of school age?
What?
Your children, school. Do they go to school?
Well, the boy's 28, the girl's 24. They finished school long ago.
Oh, I see. Either of them married?
Both.
Do they have families?
What's this got to do...
Just answer the question, Mr. Buchanan. Do you have grandchildren?
Yeah, five.
Ah, living in this city?
No, they didn't like it here, so the families took off.
I see. Too bad.
About them flying saucers, you scientists, doctors, ought to...
We are. Thank you very much, Mr. Buchanan. Sorry about that $5,000. Don't bother to see me out. Well, that takes care of Mr. Jason Buchanan. Who's next? Let me see. Here we are. Alfred Buchanan, 776 Post Road. Yes, as listed.
Mm-hmm. Who is it?
Is Mr. Buchanan in, please?
No. Go away.
Is this Mrs. Buchanan?
Yes. Go away.
My name is Cook, Mrs. Buchanan. David Cook. May I come in, please?
I don't let strangers in when my husband's away.
I'm here about free prizes, Mrs. Buchanan.
What? Free?
Prizes?
For who?
You.
From who?
Well, if you'll take the chain off and let me in, Mrs. Buchanan, I'll explain.
Well, you don't look like a crook.
I'm not, ma'am, on my honor. I always tell the truth.
Come in, Mr. What'd you say your name was?
Cook. David Cook.
This way.
Thank you.
Want some coffee?
No, thank you.
Sit there. No. What's all this about prizes? Free prizes.
Well, I'm from Worldwide Broadcasters.
Never heard of them.
Oh, you will, ma'am. You will. We're preparing a list of names for prize competitions. People who would be willing to appear on shows and win prizes. You know about that, of course.
I sure do.
Would you be willing?
Who wouldn't?
Oh, indeed, yes. Who wouldn't? Have you ever won a prize in a contest?
No. I never, because I never got a chance.
Well, maybe you will now, Mrs. Buchanan. Did your husband...
Did my husband what?
Ever win a prize.
Who, Al? Never. He never got a chance either.
Well, maybe he will too. And what about your children?
Children?
Your children. Have they ever won prizes?
Ain't got no children.
Oh. Nephews named Buchanan?
Ain't got no nephews. Just me and Al, Mr. I forget your name.
Wook. D.H. Wook. Thank you very much, Miss Buchanan. You'll be hearing from us. Private brownstone, very elegant, very posh. This might be the hot lead, right? Well, that will be high class too.
Yes?
I beg your pardon. Sorry to intrude. Would it be possible to see Mr. Foster Buchanan, please?
At this hour?
Well, I know it's rather unconventional, but I'm from the Business Safety Council, and I...
Are you, indeed?
Oh, yes, I am, indeed. And if you'll tell Mr. Buchanan that I won't take more than 5 minutes...
I'm Buchanan.
Well, how do you do, sir? My name is Acorn. Roger Acorn. I'm here from the Safety Council.
I heard you, Mr. Acorn. Do come in.
Thank you, sir.
Now, this way, Mr. Acorn. Tonight is servants' night out. So I'm managing myself.
Uh-huh.
I think we'll be comfortable here. Can I offer you a brandy and soda? I'm about to begin myself.
No, thank you, Mr. Buchanan.
You said 5 minutes. For what? I have great faith in the Business Safety Council. Our bulwark against the inroads of arrogant chicanery.
Well, the purpose of this interview is to inquire whether you have ever been defrauded by, in your words, arrogant chicanery?
The attempt has been made, Mr.
Acorn. Ronald Acorn.
To be sure. Attempts have been made, Mr. Acorn. I have never been victimized.
Ah. Your wife?
Never.
Your children? You do have children?
My son is hardly old enough to qualify as a victim of confidence tricksters.
Indeed. Interesting. Well, how old is he, Mr. Buchanan?
He's 10 years of age.
Uh-huh. Well, is it possible that he's been tricked at school? There are crooks who specialize in victimizing children, as we know at the Safety Council.
Not at my son's school. He's well protected from such riffraff.
What school is that, sir?
Germanson.
One of the best. One of the very best. Did he ever attend a city public school?
Good heavens, never.
I see, I see. Any other children, Mr. Buchanan?
A daughter, 17.
Mm-hmm.
At present in Paris, studying at the Sorbonne.
Well, thank you, Mr. Buchanan. I think my time's up. Thank you for your cooperation. I'll see myself out. Enjoy your brandy and soda. What? Who? Me?
Yeah, you, mister. Oh, could you... would you mind helping a lady in distress?
Lady in distress? Come on, I haven't used that expression since the Civil War.
Oh, honest, mister? I'm in the craziest kind of jam, and I'm scared.
Look, I've got exactly $7.50 on me. You're wasting your time.
Oh, this isn't a con, mister. Honest, it's a real jam.
Well, it better be good.
I was driving home, and I had to stop for a light back there on the corner. See?
Yes.
Suddenly, a guy jumps out at my car.
Yes.
He yanks open the back door.
Yes.
Then he slams it and beats it.
And that's your jam?
No, it's what he left behind.
Uh-huh. And what did he leave behind?
A gun.
A what?
I couldn't figure it. So the first thing I did was look in the back to see if he ripped off anything. He didn't.
He didn't.
All he did was leave a gun.
And I don't believe it.
The gun's there. I saw it. I didn't dare touch it. I didn't even go near it. I got out and ran for a cop. Then you come out of that house, so I ran to you.
Are you telling the truth?
Why would I lie? Am I trying to hit you for anything?
No.
So come and look for yourself. Maybe you can figure out what I should do. Trouble is the last thing I want. Come on.
Well, I still don't believe you, Miss...
Daisy Telford.
I still don't believe you, Miss Telford, but I'm incredibly curious. My one vice.
Would I make up a story for the sake of $7.50?
You didn't know how much I had on me.
Do you look like you have more?
That hurts. Frankly, no.
So trust me a little. Here, this is my car. Go ahead. Look.
You said the back of the car?
On the floor.
Well, I don't see any gun.
On the far side, behind the driver's seat.
Oh, my. On the far side. A gun on the floor, she says. Dropped by a mysterious stranger.
Oh, Joe, you didn't have to hit him so hard. He's such a nice guy.
Daisy, baby, when Joe Davenport cools him, he cools him for keeps. Okay, let's move it out. Mr. Herod's waiting. Come on, rise and shine. Everybody up.
All right, that'll do, Joe. I think he's coming around.
You shouldn't have clobbered him so hard. He's such a nice...
It's all yours, Mr. Herod.
Mr. Warbeck.
Oh.
Mr. Warbeck, can you hear me? Can you respond? I won't keep you very long. You'll leave laden with apologies. Just as soon as you tell me what kind of crook you are and who's behind you.
What? Crook? Who?
Mr. Warbeck, please, pull yourself together, or Joe will have to resume with his muscle, which can't be very pleasant.
I can make it a lot less pleasant, Mr. Herod.
Mr. Warbeck, can you tell me why you, ostensibly a harmless school teacher, have suddenly decided to cut yourself in on my Buchanan caper?
The trouble with a treasure hunt, even if it's only for a boy wonder with a wild talent, is that you may blunder into something totally unexpected. But you don't know about wild talents and their incredible value yet. You'll find out in the second act, which will begin in just a few moments.
Moving on with the Allied spirits, going to a brand new town. You're leaving the past miles behind you. With Allied van lines, you're homeward bound. Hello tomorrow, I'm on my way. I know you're gonna bring a brighter day. I've got the Allied spirit, and it feels like I'm going home.
The name is Beverly. No, this Beverly is not a girl. It's a factory-approved auto tune-up shop established 20 years ago. Beverly Auto Tune-Up Service in Oak Lawn, Illinois, at 4545 West 91st Street, two blocks east of Cicero Avenue. The phone is 636-0808. When your car isn't running right and needs a tune-up, you don't have to go through the inconvenience of taking it someplace, leaving it all day, being without it, and picking it up. It can be done in 45 minutes while you wait. Call Beverly, 636-0808. Make a definite appointment for a specific time. When you arrive, the team at Beverly begins working on your car immediately. There's positively no waiting. You can watch the work being done and ask questions if you like. 45 minutes later, your car is finished. Modern equipment and genuine factory parts are used. Hours are 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Stop in and look it over and remember, Beverly's open Saturday. P.S. Call Beverly about owning your own tune-up shop. Why not put Beverly's name and number in your little black book? Beverly Auto Tune-Up Service, 4545 West 91st Street, Oak Lawn, Illinois. Call 636-0808. That's 636-0808. This is WBBM Chicago News Radio 78.
You're on a treasure hunt which involves people named Buchanan. You're trapped, slugged, and wake up in what appears to be a respectable legal office. A thief type named Joe is slapping you back to consciousness. A pretty girl named Daisy is trying to protect you. A hearty legal type named Herod wants to know all about you and your connection with people named Buchanan.
Mr. Warbeck, why have you, ostensibly a harmless school teacher, suddenly taken it upon yourself to cut in on my Buchanan caper?
Oh, oh. Come, come, Mr. Warbeck, no stalling, please.
My name's Herod, Walter Herod, attorney at law. I've been going through your wallet. Your name is Warbeck. Marion Perkin Warbeck. Right?
Yeah, that's right. My name's Warbeck, but I never admit the Marion to strangers.
Why this interest in the Buchanans?
Why yours?
I'm asking the questions. Joe's been tailing you. You've seen five Buchanans per night. 30 so far. What's your angle?
You got no right to kidnap me and grill me.
Your papers and ID tell me that you're a teacher by profession. Assistant principal of a public school. I thought teachers were supposed to be legitimate. How did you get mixed up in the inheritance caper?
Caper?
Racket. The inheritance racket. The heirs of Buchanan caper. What are you using? The personal approach?
I don't know what you're talking about. I honestly don't know.
You're stepping on my toes, Warbeck, and I don't buy it. I'm taking $75,000 a year out of this caper, and I'm not going to let you cut in.
Now, look, I'm an educated man. Mention Galileo or the lesser Cavalier poets, and I'm right up there with you. But there are gaps in my education, and this is one of them. I can't handle the situation. Too many unknowns.
All right, I'm going to spell it out for you, Warbeck, so we'll know exactly where we stand, and you won't be able to dummy up.
Please do.
The inheritance racket is an old, long-term con. It operates like so. The story is that James Buchanan...
15th president of the United States?
Yes, the same one. Buchanan was a bachelor.
The story is that he died intestate, leaving a fortune for heirs unknown.
Thrilling news.
Today, at compound interest, that estate is worth hundreds of millions. Understand?
So far.
Anybody named Buchanan is a sucker for this setup. I send them a letter. Tell them there's a chance that they may be one of the heirs.
Uh-huh.
And do they want me to investigate and protect their possible share in the estate? It only costs a small yearly retainer. Most of them buy it. And now you...
Wait a minute. Don't belabor the obvious. I can draw a conclusion. You found out I was checking Buchanan families. You think I'm trying to operate the same racket. A caper? You think I'm trying to cut in? Cut in? Yes, cut in on you?
Well, aren't you?
Oh. Heavenly guardian angel, that this should happen to me. Thank you. Thank you. I'll be forever grateful.
I think you must have made him a little crazy with that clapper, Joe.
Well... Aren't you trying to cut in?
No. I'm not cutting in on you, Mr. Herod. Look, you will accompany me to my office in the school, and I will show you why I'm interested in the Buchanan.
Now, just a minute, Warbeck. I said I'd make it up to you.
We'll have to
I'm
use
not...
your car, Miss Telford. Mine's probably been towed away by now. Herod, I'm going into partnership with you three. You've got what I need to locate one particular Buchanan. He's 10 years old, and he's worth millions more than your phony $100 million. Well, this is my office. Come in.
Aren't they going to ask about us being here at night?
No, Miss Telford. I often work late.
Call this closet an office?
Well, they aren't very generous to teachers, Joe. Sit down, everybody, if you can find somewhere. And this, Miss Telford and gentlemen, is my buried treasure.
You've got a million stashed in that file?
No, Mr. Harrod, just a composition.
A composition?
Worth a million more than your Buchanan fortune.
I think this clown is putting us on.
Quiet, though. We owe him this favor. Go ahead, Mr. Warbeck.
Thank you. Now... A school assistant principal has to supervise classes. He reviews work, estimates progress, irons out student problems, and so on. I do this by random samplings. We have 900 pupils in this school. I can't supervise them individually.
Is he supposed to be saying something?
He is, Joe. Just listen.
I'm waiting for the money talk.
Here it is, Joe. Looking through some fifth grade work last month, I came across this fantastic composition. It was written by Stuart Buchanan of the fifth grade. His age must be 10 or thereabouts. Now, the composition is entitled My Vacation. I'll read it to you, and you'll understand why Stuart Buchanan must be found.
This is the money?
Yes, Joe, this is the money. My Vacation by Stuart Buchanan. This summer, I visited my friends. I have four friends, and they're very nice. First, there is Tommy, who lives in the country, and he is an astronomer. Tommy built his own telescope out of glass 6 inches across, which he ground himself. He looks at the stars every night, and he lets me look even when it is raining cats and dogs.
Wait a minute, Warbeck, are you putting us on?
Patience? Now, let's see. Cats and dogs. We could see the stars because Tommy made a thing for over the end of the telescope which shoots up like a searchlight and makes a hole in the sky to see right through the rain and everything to the stars. Well, Mr. Herod, what do you think of Tommy, the astronomer?
I don't understand this at all.
It couldn't be simpler. Tommy gets bored waiting for clear nights. He invented something that cuts through clouds, a funnel of vacuum, so he can use his telescope in all weather. And what it amounts to is a disintegration beam.
The hell you say?
The hell I don't. Next friend of Stuart's, and I quote, "Then I went to Anne Mary and stayed one whole week. It was fun, because Anne Mary has a spinach changer for spinach and beets and string beans."
What the devil is a spinach changer?
Spinach. Spinach changer. Spelling isn't one of Stuart's talents. Where was I? Oh, yes, here. "When her mother made us eat them, Anne Mary pressed the button, and they stayed the same outside, only inside they became cake, cherry and strawberry. I asked Anne Mary how, and she said it was by Enhev."
You've lost me.
Simple. Anne Mary doesn't like vegetables. So, she's just as smart as Tommy, the astronomer. She's invented a matter transmuter. She transmutes spinach into cake, cherry or strawberry. Cake she eats with pleasure. So does Stuart.
And you're crazy, Warbeck.
Not me. The kids. They're geniuses. There's only one label for them. They're wild talents.
Wild talent? What's wild talent?
Later. Let's finish up with Lazy Ethel. I continue to read Stuart's composition. My friend George has a sister, Ethel, who is the laziest girl I ever saw. She is big and fat and hates to walk. So when her mother sends her to the store, Ethel thinks to the store and thinks home with all the packages and has to hang around George's room hiding until it will look like she walked both ways. George and I make fun of her because she is fat and lazy, but she gets into movies for free. The end.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Great little girl, Ethel. She's too lazy to walk, so she teleports. Then she has to hide with her packages while George and Stuart make fun of her.
Teleport?
That's right, Miss Telford. She moves from place to place by thinking her way there.
Oh.
There ain't no such thing.
There wasn't until Lazy Ethel came along. There wasn't any disintegration beam until Tommy the astronomer invented one. And Anne Mary invented a matter transmuter because she doesn't like spinach. That, friends, is wild talent. Children accomplishing incredible things for childish reasons.
I still don't believe it. That kid's got a wild imagination, that's all.
Possibly.
You just give me 5 minutes with this Stuart Buchanan. I'm a lawyer, and I'll find out.
I had the same idea myself. I'm a teacher, and I can find out, but I can't.
Why not?
Because Stuart Buchanan's done the impossible. He's disappeared. Lock, stock, and barrel. Gone without a trace. He can't be found.
Well, which proves he was lying. You caught him in the lie, and he ran.
You still think this was just his imagination, Mr. Herod?
Well, what else?
I'll tell you what else. In that part about Anne Mary. Where is it?
It's the one who doesn't like spinach.
That's the one, Miss Telford.
Yes.
Here. Now, quote. Anne Mary pressed the button and they stayed the same outside, only inside they became cake, cherry, and strawberry. I asked Anne Mary how, and she said it was by Enhev, end quote. That's E-N-H-V.
So, that's a kid's gibberish word.
Mm-mm. No, Herod. That's how Anne Mary transmuted manner.
Well, with a kook word like Enva? Come on.
No. Not Enva, Joe. It took time, but I figured it out. That's Planck's quantum equation. E equals NHV. One of the most abstruse concepts in theoretical physics. Well, Herod?
The kid invented that, too. There's coincidence.
Does that sound likely?
Well, then he read it somewhere.
10-year-old reading quantum mechanics? Nonsense.
Oh, damn it. You let me at that kid for 5 minutes.
Me too, but he's disappeared. That's why I've been checking every Buchanan in the phone book, trying to locate him. The day I read this composition and sent down for Stuart to have a talk with him, he disappeared into thin air and hasn't been seen since.
Well, what about his family?
Trouble disappeared too. What's more, every record of their location had disappeared. A few people remember them vaguely, but that's all.
They split, huh?
Oh, the very word, Joe. Thank you. Well, what a situation. Here's a child who makes friends with child geniuses. They're making fantastic discoveries for childish purposes. Who knows? Maybe Stuart's got other friends with wilder talents.
Is this Stuart a wild talent, too?
Probably. Kids generally hang out with their peer group that shares the same interests and talents.
And what kind of genius is he?
I don't know. A genius for disappearing, maybe. He blabbed like a child in his composition. When I sent for him, he got scared like a child, ran away, and covered his tracks.
How did he get into the school files?
I don't know. All I know is he destroyed anything that might lead to him. Stuart has run away, and we have got to find him.
Just to find out, is he smart?
No, Miss Telford, to find his friends. He's the only lead. Surely I don't have to explain. What would the Pentagon pay for a disintegration beam? How many millions would an element transmuter be worth? If we could teleport, travel by mind alone, how powerful would we be?
My goodness.
Mr. Herod, this professor's almost got me convinced. How about you? Mr. Warbeck, your caper makes us look like pikers. Thanks for letting us cut in on you. We'll pay off. We'll find that kid.
then suggested that children are really alien creatures, thinking their own strange thoughts to themselves and performing incomprehensible alien acts in their own private world, which no grown-up is ever permitted to enter. Is Stuart Buchanan a doorway to this alien world? And if he's found, what will his world be like? Act 3 will tell us in just a few moments.
If you went into a Buick dealer's between now and April 30th...
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablet?
No, the sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion.
Is your bank open when you're busy and closed when you're not? Anytime, because Northwest Federal Savings keeps the best hours yours.
It's Northwest Federal Savings time, 63 hours a week.
Are Stuart Buchanan's friends working miracles with their wild talents, discovering disintegration beams, matter transmuters, teleportation? If not, does he have a wild imagination? And if he merely imagined all this, why and how has he disappeared without a trace? The only answer is to find Stuart Buchanan and question him. Walter Herod, attorney at law, is explaining to the boy's teacher how this can be done.
It's not possible for anyone to vanish without a trace, Warbeck.
Even a genius with a wild talent for crime?
You've been blundering around chasing after Buchanans in the phone book. There are other angles. You don't run after a missing person. You look around on his back trail for something he dropped.
Mm-hmm. A genius wouldn't drop anything.
All right, let's grant the kid's a genius. But a kid's a kid. He must have overlooked something. He forgot about that composition. And we'll find that something. Now, where's that school of yours located?
Jefferson Park.
Any busing?
No.
Then it's a neighborhood school. The kid's family must have lived around there. Let's go. Over there, Professor, the 800 block. Stop.
Oh, what's this address?
Jefferson Park Post Office Substation. You move out of a neighborhood, you file a change of address card with your post office. Now, wait.
Well?
No.
And what's this?
Election board. All voters are registered. If a voter moves from one election district to another, provision is usually made that a record of the transfer be kept.
Ah, clever. Stuart could hardly think of that.
No, I'm hoping. Wait for me.
Well?
No.
Now what?
Gas and electric company. All subscribers must transfer their accounts if they move. If they move out of town, they usually ask for their deposit back. There are records.
If Stuart Buchanan can break into Consolidated and destroy their records, he's a better man than I am.
We'll see. Wait.
Don't tell me he's a better man than I am.
Yes. All right, let's go. Motor Bureau.
No, huh?
No. All right, let's go back to my office. I can't stand any more disappointments.
Hi, Mr. Harris. Hi, Professor. Any luck?
No. You?
Well, maybe yes, maybe no.
Please, don't be mysterious, Joe.
I'm not. I'm spooky.
What about?
Well, me and Daisy and Charlie the Clown been covering the Jefferson Park name.
What? You let Charlie in on this caper?
No. Just brought him along for window dressing. He gets along great with kids.
Yes, and?
Idea was to locate one of his Stuart's little pals and find out where the kid went.
Well, did you?
But Charlie located the block where the Stuart kid used to live.
Good.
Daisy took off to find out what real estate company handles the block.
That was smart.
And Charlie the clown took a powder.
He what?
Disappeared. 1 minute he was with me, the next he was gone.
Did you see him go?
Yeah. He was walking behind me. When I turned around to tell him something, he just wasn't there.
Holy saints, what have we got ourselves into?
You think Stuart Buchanan had something to do with his disappearance?
What else can I think?
Well, there's got to be some rational explanation. We're going up to the Jefferson neighborhood, Joe, and look for Charlie. Warbeck, stay here and mind the store.
Office of Walter Herod, attorney at law.
Oh? This isn't Mr. Herod.
Miss Telford?
Yes, you must be the professor.
In person.
Could you put Mr. Herod on?
Not here.
Then Joe Davenport.
Same answer. They both left to do some looking.
I shouldn't say it on the phone. For you know who?
Yes.
Well, I did some finding.
Not you know who?
No, but close. I've got him here.
Got who, Daisy?
The manager of the RG Realty Company. He was in charge of the building where you know who used to live.
Daisy, you're a marvel. Bring him up to the office right away.
I can't. He hasn't got time.
That's all right. Then I'll come to him. Where are you now?
The Bristol Cafe. Third booth from the back. You'll recognize me by my black coffee without sugar.
Oh, I got here as fast as I could. Where's the manager of RG Realty? Couldn't he wait?
Oh, he's still here at the bar.
What did you get from him so far?
Well, he doesn't remember the family much. Kind of vague, you know?
Yes.
He remembers the family signed a lease for a four-room apartment in the Jefferson Arms.
Uh-huh. Did he show you the lease?
He couldn't.
Why not?
It wasn't in the files. It was gone.
Oh, I might have known.
Everything about the family was gone.
We've been wondering what kind of wild talent Stuart Buchanan has. Maybe the boy is a thief genius. How does he get at every trace, every record, and destroy it? Now, what's taking RG Realty so long at that bar for? Are you sure he didn't take a powder? Run out on you?
No. His hat and coat are hanging right here. He must be at the bar, in a check jacket. Oh, I don't see any check jacket. Do you?
No. Three men there, and nobody checked. Daisy, I'm afraid we've lost another.
Oh.
I think he's knocking us off, one by one.
All right, Warbeck, cool it. So the kids licked us straight down the line. Well, I've got a gimmick. They lived in Jefferson Arms. Look up the house phone number in the book.
I know it. There was a Buchanan listed at that address, and I checked them.
Well?
Moved out, gone, the janitor told me.
Great. That's our solid lead. Call the janitor.
Well, he told me everything he knew, and it was nothing. Buchanan's lived there, left, period. Hello? Oh, Mr. Rysdale, I'm that teacher, Mr. Warbeck, who talked to you before about... Yes, that's right. Well, I've got a friend here who wants to ask you something else.
There you are, Herod.
Now, hello. Yeah, well, listen, sir, when anybody moves in or out of a building, the janitor... Oh, excuse me, the super... takes down the name of the movers in case they damage the building. Well, yes, I'm a lawyer, I know this. It's to protect the building in case an action has to be brought, right? Yes, that's right. Now, who moved the Buchanans out? Yes, I'll wait. Yes? Oh, thanks. We've got it made. The Avon Moving Company, truck number G4. Now, this is why you're here, Daisy.
Warbeck and I couldn't get anything from the Avon movers. They had no record of moving the Buchanan family.
Well, the kid was pretty thorough.
I'm dying to meet him.
But they did have a record of the men who worked truck G4 that day. We contacted one of them, and he's going to meet us here in this bar after he quits.
What for?
To tell us everything he can remember about the job.
Including where he moved the Buchanans to.
So why me? You want I should ask him something?
No, Daisy. I want you should soften him up. You know, ask him. Here, hold it. This must be the guy.
Good evening, Mr. Moore. It is Mr. Moore?
Yeah, Patty Moore. Are you the lawyer guy?
Yes, Herod.
I've been thinking about what you asked me on the phone. And I asked the rest of the crew, all we can remember about that Jefferson Park job is that it was an all-day proposition.
Why all day?
Because it took us all the way to Helangon from Jefferson Park.
Where to?
Old Town suburb.
Old Town?
What street in Old Town, Mr. Moore?
Maple something, yeah. Maple Road.
What number?
I can't. I couldn't remember.
That kid again.
Well, we know the street, and I think Daisy may be able to coax Moore into remembering the number. Daisy, love, why don't you and your friend Patty Moore... Daisy? Daisy?
Where'd she go?
She was right there. She just up and
gone. Just like that. Gone. You got that Old Town street map, Joe?
Right here. There's Maple Road. 12 blocks long. See?
All right. 12 blocks, four apiece. We cover every house and every apartment. Now, we've got to be careful. It looks like any time anybody threatens to get close to the kid, he wipes them out. Yes?
No argument here.
All right. So we drive out to Old Town Park. Start the screening operation, but we meet at the car every half hour and check in, right?
It'll take forever. There's a million kids per square inch in Old Town.
There's $1 million a day in it for us if we find him. Now, let's move it.
Professor?
Present and accounted for, thank heavens.
All right, where's Joe?
Coming. I got mixed up in a stickball game.
Did you case the kids playing in the street, Professor?
I looked them over. No Stuart Buchanan.
And we don't know whether the kids playing on Maple Row live on Maple Row, so we stick to the apartment search. Any leads so far, Joe?
Nope.
Professor?
Negative.
Nothing in mind yet. All right. Let's keep trying. Any luck, Professor?
Not yet. You?
No. Where's Joe?
Last time I saw him, he was down the street trying to sidestep a potsy game.
Only girls play potsy.
Only girls. No Stuart Buchanan.
Where the devil is Joe?
Is he always on time?
Always.
Well, maybe got a hot lead.
You believe that?
I want to believe it.
What do you really believe?
That Joe got too close.
And the kid got it.
Yeah, but how?
Same way he got Charlie the Clown. And that manager and Daisy.
Maybe Joe got scared and quit.
No, not on $1 million.
Herod, how does a kid do it? I'm scared.
So am I. You want to quit now?
We can't. If the boy's that dangerous, we've got to find him.
Oh, we know what to do. We both covered Joe's sector. I'll take the right side of Maple Row, you take the left. We meet here every half hour. And we'll be strictly on time.
If Stuart Buchanan lets us.
And if one of us is late, honk the horn as a reminder. Make it too long, one short. Got that? Let's go.
Now, where are you, Herod? Come on. Pete's sake, Herod. Boy, has a weapon, something he invented with his wild talent, something silly like the others, a special light, maybe, that murders people, wipes them out like Daisy, and... Oh, what is going to happen when Stuart Buchanan grows up? What's going to happen when the rest of them grow up? He's somewhere in Herod's sector, right side of Maple Row. This block, destroying us one by one, smiling to himself, a vicious, killing genius. Stuart? Stuart Buchanan? Can you hear me? I'm here, Stuart, waiting for you. Stuart? 85? 90? 95? 100? Anybody round my base is it? Stuart Buchanan! Come out! Come out! Wherever you...
Stuart Buchanan, come out, wherever you are. Where is he? In an alley behind Maple Row, deeply involved in a game of hide-and-seek, aged 10, wearing sweater, jeans, and sneakers, hiding behind ash cans, determined not to be caught. He looks up at the sunset sky and sees the evening star and whispers, "Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. Wish I may, wish I might. Grant me the wish I wish tonight. I wish that anybody who tries to bother me would go away forever. I'll be back shortly."
"Hi, this is Lloyd Bridges with a favor to ask of you. Would you take a minute, just 60 seconds out of your busy day, and listen? Really listen to the radio? I wouldn't intrude like this, except that I have an important message for you from the March of Dimes. Now, here it is. America's number one child health problem is birth defects. Not measles, not mumps, not the common cold, but birth defects. And the speed with which science finds the answers to that problem depends on you. Not someone else, you. Your generosity to the March of Dimes will add to the fund that supports the massive research needed to find those answers. And if you won't help,
can you be sure anyone will?
And if no one helps, can any of us ever hope that future generations will see the day when every child will be born free from the threat of birth defects? Please, before you go back to business as usual, show your support for this vital work. Give generously to the March of Dimes.
Buchanan is unaware that he has disposed of Warbeck, Herod, Joe, Daisy, and scores of others who disappeared forever. That he has forced his parents to move from Jefferson Park. That he has wiped out almost every trace of himself in his innocent desire to be left alone and happy. He is unaware that he is a genius with a wild talent. The power of this boy wonder is for wishing and making his wishes come true. And I sincerely hope that none of you has a wild talent in your family. Our cast included William Redfield, Robert Dryden, Ken Harvey, Martha Greenhouse, and Dan Ocko. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I would possess her soul with patience. She's mine.
She's all yours.
19th Precinct, Sergeant Sloan.
Sergeant, I hope it's a false alarm, but I happen to pass by 221 Collier Place. And I'm sure I heard a woman screaming. You know, as if she was being murdered or something.
But I didn't do it, officer. I didn't do it.
You'll have to come along with us, Mr. Mason.
But she was dead. She was already dead when I got here. Sergeant, you have to believe me.
It doesn't matter if I believe you or not, Mr. Mason. Your problem is going to be with a judge and a jury.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Franklin, and once again I quote from the wisdom of Poor Richard's Almanac, on a successful marriage, there are three basic rules for a successful marriage. First, every man has his faults. If you can bear your own, certainly you should be able to bear the faults of your wife. Second, it is important to let your wife think she is having her own way. And third, let her have it. If you follow these three rules, you will never need any other for a successful marriage. And now, some wisdom from a modern source.